Great to have you here. In this lesson, we're exploring virtual communication and digital collaboration. If you've watched the overview, this will build on that. If not, you'll still be able to follow along. Now, let's go further by exploring practical examples, future workplace relevance, responsible use, and how you can build confidence with this skill. Think about that sinking feeling for a second. You send a critical project-blocking question to your team channel, and you just watch the little typing bubble appear for what feels like 5 minutes.
Oh, the worst.
Right. You're waiting for the solution, and finally, they just reply with, okay. That massive gap between the clarity you need and the vague digital noise you actually get, well, that is the graveyard of modern productivity. We aren't here today to teach you how to send a calendar invite. We are here to bridge the gap between firing messages into the void and building the actual psychological infrastructure required to make remote teamwork function.
Which is such a critical distinction to make right out of the gate. I mean, our mission for this deep dive is to look under the hood of how teams actually operate when they aren't in the same room. We have to uncover a fundamental truth about the future of work, and that is that clarity is the ultimate currency.
Clarity is currency. I like
that. Yeah. Because in a physical office, you might be able to survive on vague instructions because you can just, you know, walk over to someone's desk and read their body language. Yeah. Digitally, if you lack clarity, your team goes intellectually bankrupt. But if you have it, you can build almost anything from anywhere.
You already know the baseline difference between our two core concepts today. Virtual communication is the mechanism. It's the Zoom call, the email, the instant message. Digital collaboration is the execution, the shared blueprints, the actual work being done together on a platform. But where I see teams constantly trip up is trying to use a communication tool to do collaboration work. It's like trying to play a high-speed game of tennis via the postal service. The tool itself dictates the rhythm of the work. You need a ping pong table for rapid ideas, but you need a secure vault for the final contract.
Okay, let's unpack this. What actually happens to a team's psychology when those rhythms break down?
Well, it's disastrous, and it happens way faster than most people realize. When we look at the mechanics of weak digital communication, the consequences aren't just minor annoyances. We are talking about something called the fundamental attribution error.
The fundamental attribution error. Okay, what is that exactly?
It's a psychological concept where if someone else makes a mistake, we attribute it to their character. Like we say, they are lazy or they don't care. But if we make a mistake, we attribute it to our circumstances. Like, I was just too busy or the instructions were unclear.
Oh, wow. Yeah, I can see how that happened. Right. And in a digital space, this error just runs wild. A vague message sits there festering. If a teammate takes 4 hours to reply to a Slack message, the fundamental attribution error tricks you into thinking they are blowing you off.
Instead of assuming they're just, you know, stuck in back-to-back virtual meetings all morning.
Exactly. And that assumption actively leads to interpersonal conflict, plummeting productivity, and a complete breakdown of trust.
I want to push back on that a little bit, though, or at least play devil's advocate for the generation entering the workforce right now.
Yeah.
Because we've all been texting, using group chats, living on social media since we were 12 years old.
Sure, yeah.
So moving into a digital workspace shouldn't be some massive culture shock. Why does transitioning from a physical classroom or office into a digital space suddenly cause this fundamental attribution error to destroy team cohesion?
That is a highly relevant pushback, and it brings us right to the core of team dynamics. Yes, we are used to texting socially, but social texting doesn't require the same high-stakes coordination as building a product or, say, managing a client crisis.
That's a fair point.
If we connect this to the bigger picture and look at the insights from Patrick Lencioni's work on team dysfunctions alongside Daniel Goleman's research on emotional intelligence, the picture becomes very clear. In a physical environment, human beings rely heavily on microscopic nonverbal cues.
Like facial expressions and stuff.
Exactly. A slight nod, a furrowed brow, a deep breath. These tell us if our message is landing, if our colleague is stressed, or if there is some unspoken disagreement. When you strip away those physical cues in a digital space, a simple, blunt, let's talk about this later, reads as aggressive rather than just rushed.
Right, because you can't see that the person typing it is currently sprinting through an airport to catch a flight. You just see the plain text on a blank screen.
Precisely. And that is where emotional intelligence has to be actively adapted for the screen. You can no longer rely on your physical presence to project warmth or competence. You have to manufacture the clarity that body language used to provide.
Manufacture clarity. That makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, and this ties directly back to Lencioni's framework. The absolute root cause of team failure is an absence of trust. And trust is eroded by ambiguity. In a remote setting, intentional structured communication is the only mechanism you have to eliminate ambiguity and build trust.
And without it, what happens?
Your team will default to artificial harmony. Nobody argues, but nobody actually commits to the work either.
Which means navigating remote work without a deliberate psychological strategy is just a recipe for burnout. So let's talk about the actual strategies. How do we manufacture this clarity?
Well, the materials point to four key approaches. First is using concise communication. Second is clarifying expectations up front. Third is practicing active listening. And fourth is documenting decisions.
But I have to stop you at the third and fourth points, documenting every single decision. Doesn't that just kill a team's agility? I mean, if I have to write a bureaucratic summary every time I do something, it feels like I'm spending more time doing paperwork than doing actual work.
It absolutely feels like a bureaucratic nightmare at first glance. I totally get that. But the mechanism behind it is fundamentally about the economics of time. In remote work, synchronous time, when everyone is on a call together, is incredibly expensive and cognitively draining.
Oh, for sure. Zoom fatigue is real.
Exactly. But asynchronous time, when people are doing deep, focused work on their own schedule, is cheap and highly productive. Documenting decisions is the currency that allows that asynchronous work to happen.
So it's not about creating paperwork for the sake of it. It's about buying your team the freedom to not be in meetings all day.
Yes. And that completely reframes what active listening means in a virtual context. In a physical room, active listening is eye contact and nodding. In a Zoom room where half the cameras might be off to save bandwidth, nodding does absolutely nothing.
That's so true. You're just nodding at a wall.
Right. So virtual active listening means synthesizing the chaotic conversation, dropping a concise summary into the chat box to ensure alignment, and then transferring that outcome into a shared document. You are creating a permanent asset out of a fleeting conversation.
You are telling your team, I understand our objective, and I have recorded it so you don't have to keep it in your working memory, which reduces everyone's cognitive load.
Precisely. You're freeing up their brain space.
Here's where it gets really interesting. Let's bring this down to earth with a real-world scenario, because I think picturing the chaos helps solidify the solution. We have this case study of a student startup team trying to coordinate a project.
Oh, this is a classic example.
Imagine you are in this startup. It's 11:00 p.m. on a Tuesday. Someone drops a massive Google Drive link into the WhatsApp group chat with no context. Half the team doesn't have the right viewing permissions.
Of course they don't.
Meanwhile, in that exact same thread, three other people are in a heated argument about the hex code for the company logo. And the main deadline is slipping because nobody actually knows who is responsible for the final presentation deck. It is an absolute nightmare of cognitive overload.
We have all lived some version of that group chat. It is the perfect example of using a communication tool, like WhatsApp, to try and execute digital collaboration. The tool dictates the wrong rhythm.
But they managed to pull themselves out of that death spiral. They introduced structured meetings and shared task management systems.
Yeah.
And I want to be clear here, they didn't just throw new software at the problem. Software doesn't fix a broken culture. They had to assign specific behaviors to specific tools.
That is the turning point. Let's look at how a high-functioning remote team actually operates using the right rhythms. They pull the rapid-fire, informal questions out of email and put them into a tool like Slack or Microsoft Teams. That is your ping pong table.
Okay, makes sense.
Then they take their deep institutional knowledge, the project specs, the meeting summaries we just talked about, and they put that into a platform like Notion or Wiki. That is your secure vault.
Right.
Finally, they track who is doing what and by when using a visual board like Trello or Asana. That is your assembly line.
I love that breakdown. Slack is the hallway conversation, Notion is the library, and Trello is the assembly line. You wouldn't try to build a car in the library, and you wouldn't try to store permanent records in the hallway.
Building on that, the student startup succeeded because they finally stopped trying to build the car in the hallway. They separated the noise from the work.
But even with the right tools in the right places, setting up Trello doesn't magically fix the underlying human problem. If people are still pinging each other at midnight on Slack or moving Trello cards around on a Sunday morning, the burnout remains.
Oh, absolutely.
The tools might be organized, but the culture is still exhausting. How do we ensure these platforms don't just become a 24/7 leash tying us to our work?
This raises an important question, and it's where we have to discuss the human etiquette of digital work. The technology outpaces our social norms, so we have to intentionally design boundaries. A core principle here is that respectful communication builds trust.
But what does respect actually look like on a screen?
Well, respect in a digital environment has a very specific definition. It means actively respecting two things: people's time and their mental space.
Because nobody wants an urgent notification popping up on their phone while they're at dinner with their family, especially if it's something that could have waited until Monday.
Exactly. Respecting time means doing the hard work of being concise. It means editing your message so the recipient doesn't have to decipher a novel to find the one question you actually need answered.
And respecting mental space.
That is about establishing service level agreements, or SLAs, within your team. If I send you a Slack message at 4:00 p.m. on a Friday, what is our agreed-upon expectation for your reply? If the expectation is whenever you log back on Monday morning, I have just given you back your weekend. I've reduced your anxiety.
That makes total sense. That is responsible use right there.
It's about creating an ecosystem where people feel safe disconnecting because they know the system is documented and the boundaries are clear.
Which perfectly transitions into the practical application. How do you, the listener, actually build this ecosystem for yourself?
Right.
How do you step into a future career and not just get swept away by all this digital noise?
There is a framework for this, a way to build your own confidence.
Think of it as drafting a team treaty or a digital code of conduct. Before you launch into the actual work of a university project or a professional sprint, you sit down and you agree on the rules of engagement.
And a robust team treaty needs to address four specific mechanisms to be effective. First, you have to establish meeting schedules. The mechanism here is protecting asynchronous time. You agree on exactly when you will sync up so that the rest of the week is protected for deep, focused work.
Got it. What's the second pillar?
Second, you define your communication tools. This prevents the tennis via postal service problem. You literally write down, we use Slack for questions that need an answer within 2 hours, and we use email for client updates.
It eliminates the guesswork. You never have to wonder, wait, where did they send me that file?
Exactly. The third pillar is collaboration expectations. This directly attacks the fundamental attribution error we discussed earlier. You agree on response times and working hours. If everyone knows the rules, nobody is accused of being lazy when they don't reply at 8:00 p.m.
That is huge for team morale. And the fourth.
The fourth pillar is reporting processes. This dictates how you document progress. The goal here is to completely eliminate the dreaded status update meeting. If everyone updates their Trello board by Friday at noon, you don't need a one-hour Zoom call on Monday just to ask what everyone did.
That is such a powerful mindset shift. If you adopt these structured habits now, you won't be intimidated by remote work in your future career. You won't be reacting to every single ping and notification like a digital firefighter.
Right. You will have the architecture for success already built. You become the person who manages the collaboration rather than the person who is victimized by it.
And that proactive stance is what separates highly effective professionals from those who constantly feel overwhelmed by the modern workplace. So, what does this all mean? When we zoom all the way out, how does effective virtual communication fundamentally improve teamwork and collaboration?
To summarize the mechanics we've covered today, first, intentional communication acts as the psychological infrastructure of remote teams. It replaces the lost physical cues of an office. Second, adopting specific tools for specific rhythms, you know, separating the hallway from the library, drastically reduces cognitive load.
Which makes everyone faster and less stressed.
Right. Third, responsible communication, setting those strict boundaries around time and mental space, is how you prevent burnout and build trust. And finally, establishing clear expectations through a team treaty eliminates ambiguity, which in turn kills that fundamental attribution error before it can even start.
You can't have agility without efficiency, and you can't have trust without clarity. It is a completely interconnected system.
It really is. And as we look toward the digitally enabled future you're all stepping into, I want to leave you with one final provocative question to mull over.
Oh, I like these. Let's hear it.
We've spent this session talking about the human effort required to document decisions, write concise messages, and clarify expectations. But we are rapidly entering an era where artificial intelligence can do a lot of that heavy lifting.
Yeah, that's true.
Very soon, AI will auto-reply to your routine emails, Instantly summarize your one-hour Zoom meetings into 3 bullet points and update your task boards automatically.
The software will literally be doing the talking and the documenting for us.
Precisely. So the question becomes, when the algorithms take over the mechanics of virtual communication, what does human digital collaboration actually look like? Are we going to be building trust with each other, or are we just going to be trusting each other's algorithms to be polite and efficient?
Wow, that is a fascinating thing to consider. As the friction of communication disappears, the necessity for genuine human empathy is only going to skyrocket. Your ability to read the digital room and authentically connect will become the ultimate future-proof skill. To help you build that skill today, we highly encourage you to stay curious about these tools, remain responsible with your digital boundaries, and ensure you are future ready.
Absolutely.
Take the time right now to review the end of module study guide and definitely complete the workbook activities, especially drafting that team treaty for your next project. We also want to explicitly acknowledge the vital ideas that provided the foundation for our deep dive today. We explored the brilliant concepts found in Patrick Lencioni's The 5 Dysfunctions of a Team, published in 2002.
We also drew from Daniel Goleman's seminal work, Emotional Intelligence, published in 1995, and the incredibly practical insights from Remote by Jason Fried and David Heinemeier Hansen, published in 2013. If you want to truly master the psychology of modern work, those are essential starting points. Thank you so much for joining us on this deep dive. Remember, the next time you log on to work with your team, you aren't just shouting into the void. You have the psychology, the tools, and the exact blueprints to build something incredible together.